Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of The Film Stage Show. As always, I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan, and today I'm joined by Dan King.
Hello.
Hey. We also have our own personal M, Jordan Raup.
Hello.
And here at MI6, on loan from America's FBI, we have Special Agent Will Graham.
Woo!
Today, on the Film Stage Show, we'll be talking about the newest James Bond film, Spectre. This is actually working out so much better than I anticipated it would. So Spectre is all we'll be talking about today. We will, of course, have a special set-off spoiler section. This is the newest film with Daniel Craig starring as James Bond and Skyfall director Sam Mendes returning.
I can barely hear you.
Oh, really? Is this better?
Not really.
All right. Well, anyway. I just love this theme so much. All right, so before we get into a review, allow me to say that you can email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. You can, of course, comment on the pages that these are posted on, and you can follow us on Twitter at Filmstage Show.
Wow, and no rehearsal either. That was perfect, Brian.
Why, thank you.
Pause for dramatic effect.
Damn right. Okay. Well, that's it. There's really nothing else to talk about. So let's get into our feature review of Spectre. Again, the newest film in the James Bond series, starring Daniel Craig. Ralph Fiennes, right? That's how he pronounces that name?
Yes. Yes.
All right. As well as Christoph Waltz. And this newest film finds James Bond in the fallout of Skyfall, tracking a shadowy international organization bent on terror and mayhem. Here is the trailer.
You had no authority. None. Mexico City. What were you doing there?
I was taking some overdue holiday.
So what's going on, James? They say you're finished.
What do you think?
I think you're just getting started.
Just getting started. Just like this review. So, gentlemen, was everyone here a fan of Skyfall?
I was not really.
Ooh.
Oh,
yeah.
I know. I thought it was just like elegantly shot. Obviously, Roger Deakins killed it. I rewatched it just to make sure, you know, because I hadn't seen it since the theaters, and I kind of felt the same way. I think it gets just it's extremely bloated, especially kind of in the last third. And I do like I mean Javier Bardem's character. Yeah, he kind of brings a nice twist that that Christoph Waltz really doesn't do here, which we can talk about. But but yeah, no, I enjoy kind of like the surface pleasures, I could say, of Skyfall, but I really didn't to the kind of, you know, diving deeper into Daniel Craig's character, his past and all this stuff. And it kind of petered off big time for me. But yeah, it is well shot, but I just didn't when I came out, everyone was like, oh, this blows away Casino Royale and everything else that came before, and I just didn't really understand kind of that.
Okay. Well, did anyone else feel the way that Jordan felt? Because I loved Skyfall.
I remember
liking it more than that.
Go ahead, Danny.
I was just going to say I remember it liking it more, but I haven't seen it since then.
When I saw it in theaters, I thought it was good. I enjoyed it, but I didn't fall head over heels for it the way I did for Casino Royale. And I mean, I watch Casino Royale probably once a year at least. So.
Oh wow! All right, I I like Casino Royale. I think that Skyfall had a little more style and panache, and I liked the way it kind of paid homage to the Bonds of old, which is a weirdly weird thing to say, I now realize. But let's get into what we thought of Spectre. A lot of hype and build up to this film. Let's see if it paid off. Jordan Raup, why don't you kick us off?
Sure. All right, why not? I would say the first half of this one, I quite enjoyed the kind of just the more simplistic kind of A to B thriller that it kind of lays out. It's kind of lays down a trail of breadcrumbs, you could say. And I kind of enjoyed like the piecing together of those. The opening I thought in Mexico City was great. Like Skyfall, he really knows how to, Sam Mendes really knows how to like kick things off. I really thought the henchman played by Dave Bautista, Hendrix, I think is his name. Yes. I thought he added a great presence to the film. There's a train fight in there that I really enjoyed. I'm sure we'll have major spoiler section for this, but kind of once Christoph Waltz figures in more heavily into the movie, I think it gets really, really muddled and just it doesn't really, have that. They're clearly trying to have an impact like they did in Skyfall on kind of James Bond's past and different things. I really don't think it lands whatsoever. And it just kind of goes for being more bombastic. And it could have helped by, kind of going the opposite way, I think. So, yeah, I reviewed it for the site and I did give it a B- just because I did really enjoy that first half quite a bit. And so if I would have to grade just the halves, it would be like B+ and then like C-. So I guess it kind of evens out. So that's my general thoughts. That did not need to be 100 and whatever, 50 minutes or something. But
It's right at 2.5 hours.
Oof, yeah. You can feel that. So
I didn't really feel that. I felt it. All right. Well, William Graham, why don't you tell us what you thought?
So I have a similar feeling to Jordan. I think the first half of the film is actually quite good. It's got a lot going for it. I love the set pieces, the action stuff. It doesn't dive too deep into the plotting at that point. So right after kind of the train fight sequence, I think it just kind of nosedives from there because it's got to fill another hour of movie and it's just got nowhere to go. I really quite enjoyed the opening sequence. It's a pseudo long take, I guess, is what they call these things now. They're happening more and more now, but I guess because the cinematographers have gotten more sophisticated with their equipment and things like that. I love the sequences where it follows Bond into the elevator at one point. And it really kind of kicks things off in a very spectacular fashion. And I wish it had more of that energy throughout the last half of the film. It desperately needs that when things, both the cinematography gets dark and the plottings and the machinations are just kind of unraveling. Overall, I thought it was still an enjoyable film, but I think they need to give up on the backstory of Bond and just focus on his future. This really is not working for me. So, and that's coming from someone that absolutely loves Casino Royale as a starting point, not as give me more of that continually. And that's what they've been doing. And I gotta say, I made a big deal of the fact that Monica Bellucci was in this film. There's been some talks about Craig getting asked about, having an older woman seduce him and things like that. And she's in this film for all of 2 minutes. And just a terrific waste of a beautiful woman. And it's just really, really weird the way they treat her character. I guess it's not all that different from the way they treat a lot of like Bond's flings, but it just feels off in this particular outing.
Like purely because they got a bigger name star? Is that what you're saying?
Purely because of that, and it feels like there's a lot that they tried to build up with her character. Apparently the leaked script she's in it a little bit more, she's got more to do, and they I'm sure at 2.5 hours they were probably like, what can we cut? And some of her character I'm sure got cut.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Danny King.
Yeah, I think I agree with a lot of what's been said. When we get into spoilers, we can talk about like where the movie falls apart. I think some of the plotting in the second half is just brutal, and there's some scenes there to like really like pick apart that I found silly. I agree that the opening is really exceptional, and it's funny. The movie starts with like the words on the screen, "The dead are alive."
Yeah,
and it's not even like a quotation.
No, so it's just the movie telling you that.
Yeah, so I like kind of just laughed at that just because of like the absurdity of the gesture. Like, the dead are alive. here's Spectre. And
the drums from the parade were already playing over that, weren't they? So it was like,
I think so, yeah.
The dead. And then it's like, yeah. It's like, are alive. And I'm like, whoa, what am I?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. And that opening shot was like awesome, just seeing Craig walk around, even like changing his outfit at one point. It was just really impressive. But there are just like, the script is so uninteresting. I agree that the Monica Bellucci character is kind of given the short shrift, but that seems to me to be like every supporting character in the film.
It's like every supporting character in every Bond film.
Well, yeah, Ben Whishaw actually gets a lot to do in this film.
Yeah, I thought his performance was good, actually. But I mean, this has to be like Christoph Waltz's most embarrassing performance. the casting, it's one of those instances of like too good casting. It's like, play this role you've already played and just do it like that.
Bad for him because he's been very limited kind of in his career choices after Inglourious Basterds.
That's true. And there are scenes here, like I was joking with my friend afterward, where it just seems like everyone's kind of phoning it in, and we sort of like made up this image of Sam Mendes in his hotel room, like calling the set, being like, yeah, two cars, they're driving. One of them is a bad guy. The other one's a good guy. Just film it. I'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks, second unit.
Yeah. And like the whole subplot about global surveillance is just really bad. There's one scene where they're, kind of like the second villain of the film is the like guy that's trying to organize this global surveillance network. And there's a scene where they vote on his proposal, and the two guys representing South Africa have their little iPad in front of them, and it's like yes or no on a giant screen. And I'm like, all right, I don't know if that's how this would go down. And then Ralph Fiennes gets a text that a car in wherever in Rome is in a river, and he just turns with the guy next to him. He's like, dude, there's a car in Rome that's in a river. It's got to be Bond, right? It's like, what? Like, that makes no sense. And there's another scene.
It wasn't Ray Fiennes who got the email. It was a different guy saw the article about
and then said, are we sure Bond is in London?
But yep. I think it might be because he recognized the kind of car.
Yeah, it just seemed like silly.
How many DB10s are there, really?
And there's one scene where so the shot is like Ralph Fiennes on the left, Naomi Harris is kind of like in the middle, and then the global surveillance guy is on the right.
Andrew Scott, we should say.
Yeah, Andrew Scott. And Ralph Fiennes is just kind of giving him a little speech like, you know, this isn't the end of this. And then, like, Ralph Fiennes walks out of frame because the conversation's over, but the shot is held. And so Naomi Harris has to like take a few steps forward and like just look at C and give him like this look and then like leave the frame. And it's like one of the most awkward moments in the movie where like the scene is over, but they were like, we just got to hold this until she leaves. So she like takes a step forward and just looks at him. And it's almost like he's like a classmate and she's just gives him this look. And then it like next scene. And it was just like, it was super poorly executed and like just seemed phoned in. But I mean, I it was entertaining.
but I liked it.
No. Sat through it happily, but
Danny's
it just seemed
like, I don't want people, you know, to go too bad on this. So yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it just seemed like no one seemed super invested in anything that was going on. And
One thing I kind of want to mention before you get into your own thoughts, Brian. I hate to jump in, but apparently the longtime Eon editor, I guess, for like a lot of these James Bond films, it didn't edit this film. Either he passed away or I'm not sure what happened there, but I guess it's a guy that's fairly new. I was reading something earlier today and they were talking about how they sorely missed the editor that they've usually had.
Well, it's got to make the new guy feel like shit.
Yeah, his the new guy's name is Lee Smith, so we can drag him through the mud.
Well,
properly.
Lee Smith does all of Christopher Nolan's movies.
Mm-hmm.
So, and after they ripped off Dark Knight for Skyfall, I guess it was perfect fitting. So
they well, I think they should have gotten the guy who edited Rogue Nation because
or the guy who directed Rogue Nation or anyone involved with Rogue Nation.
Yes, they should have just called this Rogue Nation. That would have been
Spectre Nation, because it is that whole thing, and it's what we went through between
Dark. Are you talking about Star Trek Into Darkness?
No, I was going to say Skyfall and the other Mission Impossible film.
Ghost Protocol?
Ghost Protocol. Because they both have that kind of, you know, agent off the cuff and trying to stop someone doing a thing. And like, there was a lot of crossover there, and there's even more crossover here. So I'm just waiting for the James Bond, Ethan Hunt. I'm sorry, James Bond v. Ethan Hunt. Dawn of ass kicking and crazy stunts.
It'll happen soon enough.
I would love that, actually. I'd be fine with that. I heard a lot of bad buzz before this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I could not escape people tweeting about how much they disenjoyed it. So I don't know if they dropped my expectations enough or what, but I liked this film. I didn't have any of the problems with it that some people seem to have. Though, Danny, I did notice that scene that you just discussed with Moneypenny giving the stink eye to C.
Oh, it's classic.
But the funny thing was, I couldn't figure out if that was like bad filmmaking or if that's just Moneypenny not being good at giving people bad looks.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, is that a character choice? And if so, was it a wise one? But it's such a small thing to pick up on, but it says something about the fact that we both saw it because it really is utterly bizarre. I was like, did they just not get the blocking right? So she had to take an extra step to give him the look, or was she just like, you know, it sucks that I didn't get to say anything, so I'm just gonna lean into this. I didn't have a problem with Monica Bellucci not being in it more. The fact that she survived puts her well above many Bond women who've served similar purposes. I loved that whole scene with her, actually. The music choice under that was amazing, and I can't figure out what that opera selection is. And it's annoying me, because I know I've heard it in other films, and I can't figure it out, which is terrible. The Dave Bautista as Hinks, which I don't think they ever say his name in the entire movie.
No, I don't think so.
But as far as like kind of brawny Bond henchmen go, I thought he was pretty great. he has, I believe, literally no lines. And he's got metal spikes for thumbnails.
I think he's just got metal thumbnails.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. So he deploys those to great effect early in the film. I thought that I didn't really even have a problem with Christoph Waltz's performance. I mean, he's a little kooky, but I kind of enjoyed that. He wasn't as flamboyant as Javier Bardem or stoic as, I just want to keep calling him Hannibal.
Mads Mikkelsen.
Mads Mikkelsen.
Good old Mads.
Mads. But I didn't have a problem with it. Like, people kept saying, like, oh, it's offensively bad and poorly edited and it all falls apart. And I was expecting, like, a train wreck. But I'm like, no, this is just a standard, normal Bond film. Like,
I think
Skyfall and Casino Royale were so well done that I think it made us believe that the Bond series is well made. And it's really not. Like, I think a lot of these films are complete and utter messes, but they're buoyed by the fact that it's James Bond. And we like seeing this guy in a crisp suit get out of impossible situations and kick ass. Well, and we get that here.
I think the big thing that's missing from this film in particular and Skyfall as well is just the lack of fun. There's
Skyfall, I was fine with it. But this one, I felt like they could have had a little more fun. So I agree.
And you watch a film like Rogue Nation where you can just tell, you know, he's having a blast on set. And the film is fun to watch. It gives you those goofy, crazy scenarios. There's a scene in this film with the airplane that reminds me of the best parts of that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just not enough of that. There's just not enough of that in this film in particular.
And I think a lot of that has to do with them delving into his past, which I'm trying to think back to Casino Royale and Skyfall, and I guess one of us should say the words Quantum of Solace.
How dare you, Brian?
I'm so sorry. I am so sorry. But I know that they talked about his past, especially in Skyfall, and, like, you know, M has a line in one of these movies where she say, like, you know, we kind of target orphans, like, orphans are best because blah, blah, blah.
I think she says that in Skyfall.
Right. So I know that his past has been set up, but it's just like, I think that the cultural icon of James Bond is so much more of a fashion plate than a person that I can never attach those personal elements. So it constantly feels like they're pulling the stuff out of the air, and I have to force myself to remember, oh, no, wait, James Bond has, like, a life now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's not just a name.
Right.
Like, yeah.
To me, James Bond is always just, he's a dapper British guy who shoots people and saves the world.
And sleeps with beautiful women.
Oh, yeah, of course. And I don't need to know that he does that because, like, his love died, and he's just kind of a cold bastard ever now. What, that was from Casino Royale.
that's what confused me with all these films. Like, that is all I needed to get behind him. I think they handled that arc perfectly. And then here it really feels like they're tripping over themselves. I mean, I don't know when we want to get into spoilers, but there's a point where they try to bring everything together in all of the Craig Bond movies. And you're just like, it's just kind of dealt with a shrug rather than like, wow, okay, this is all coming together in an epic way. It doesn't feel like that at all. It
feels that way specifically because they didn't write it with that intention ever. You know,
yeah,
it's not until this film in particular where they're like, oh, hey, we can play with that. And it's like, yeah, but you didn't set that up.
Well,
they did
that in Quantum of Solace because it literally takes place like the day of Casino Royale. Mm-hmm. He's got Mr. White. And he's learning about this organization. Like, White tells him about it. Like, you know, these people are everywhere. And I don't know. Watch the trailer. and I know that they set that up, but I feel like in Quantum of Solace, like, they dealt with that.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like there was still stuff to be dealt with. But apparently there is. And like Batman Begins leads to The Dark Knight, and The Dark Knight is not really informed by Batman Begins in any meaningful way in a plot, because you know who Batman is, and now you know how he got his start, but The Dark Knight doesn't rely on you having seen Batman Begins, which is good, because I'm pretty sure a lot more people saw The Dark Knight than Batman Begins. And they don't ever mention, like, the destruction of the Narrows, and the fact that the train was, like, blown up and destroyed a city block. And that was fine. And then the third film, they came back and they tied it all together in what I found to be a satisfying way. And this, it feels like it's trying to be The Dark Knight Rises, but it doesn't work.
Yeah, well, I mean, with part of that is, like, that was definitively three films, and that's all there will be. Like, with Bond, they're going to have another one. There's going to be... It's never ending. And so to have this little blip right. of a arc feels... They don't need as much as they're putting into it. They could explore some of these things later, and it feels like they're trying to close a certain chapter, but then at the end, you're kind of left wondering... Like, I'm fearful for the next one, if Craig comes back, that they're going to try to even go down this road further, and... I will not really be that excited.
That's my concern, because Casino Royale is a great jumping off point, and from there you can jump into whatever you want.
You can have unlimited Bond, you know, forays and stuff like that from that point on.
Right.
It's
and then
a
when
great
people say,
beginning.
Like, why does he sleep with three women a film? You could be like, oh, because the girl died. But you don't need to have her keep coming up as a psychological reason for everything. You could just be like, yo, why is Bond a misogynist jerk who, you know, doesn't tie himself down to any of these women? Because he's been hurt too much and now he just doesn't want to. Fine. I'm down with that.
Yeah, it used to be you could tell someone, oh, why does he sleep with so many women? Go watch Casino Royale. Now it's going to be go watch Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, Skyfall, and Spectre, and don't blow your brains out, you know, waiting for each one.
Exactly. So it's an issue. But at the same time, I found the film to be entertaining and beautiful enough that I didn't have the catastrophic reaction that so many other people in the world did.
I think you're right, Brian, that Skyfall and Casino Royale had just kind of elevated it to a point where people expected this to just be fantastic. And the other thing is, I was just looking at the budget, and holy shit, it costs anywhere from $245 to $300 million.
That's crazy.
I don't, like, you know, I guess these movies cost a lot of money, but I'm pretty sure, like, Rogue Nation probably costs significantly, like, at least half that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was all the extras in the Day of the Dead scene.
No joke. That whole sequence was pretty wonderful. And,
I was gonna say, did you guys like? I thought Thomas Newman's score, especially in the car chase. There's like one shot where like the car, like they're like zipping down, and there's like a opera house or something in the background, and like literal opera like kicks in. Did you guys recognize that all?
I did.
No, I didn't. Really
okay, I love that, and I wish the movie had more kind of that. Synergy with all the elements working together, and because it really, I don't know, the scene with him him in the airplane, like trying to like knock cars off the
street.
That
was brilliant.
I don't know, it felt so like such a haphazard thing. Like that's his best plan, I guess. I don't know. It just felt, I don't know.
That's what I kind of love about Bond. Is he does something crazy like that, and then he's just like so cool. He's like, yeah, I don't know, whatever. Yeah.
Can we dive into spoilers? Because there's a certain element. There's a few elements that I just hated that I need to talk about.
Well, so I guess one thing before we jump into spoilers real quick is to just kind of mention that it seems like Danny, Jordan, and I have some serious issues with the film, and yet we couldn't help but walk away with, you know, kind of a smile on our face. It's still overall a fun film in many, you know, aspects. It's just the whole thing. It's probably not going to be something that I'm going to want to watch again, but maybe parts.
Well, like I said, I mean, I think Skyfall and Casino Royale just made us think that these were important, well-made movies. And it's kind of like Marvel, like Marvel is just a new, more continuity-heavy former James Bond. It's like none of the movies are particularly well done, but you get what you came for, and you don't really care that it's not 12 Years a Slave. Why did I choose that one? It's not even Mad Max Fury Road. It's like these are always done by like gun for hire guys, and they know that we're just there for the vibe. And that's the same thing with the Marvel films. Like you're there, you're in for the vibe.
Well, it's funny because a lot of this, the meme going around right now is that Eon and Broccoli are going to be looking to Martin Campbell and be like, hey, we need a reboot. Like, you've done it with GoldenEye. Like, you've done it with Casino Royale. Come on, give us another.
I think they're on this, like, every other movie will be good because, you know, on this kind of off and on streak. So here's hoping.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're due for another good one.
Indeed. Well, I mean, they you know, if you look at the way it's done, it's Casino Royale, great. Quantum of Solace, not so great. Skyfall, amazing. This one, not so amazing. So, you know, it's a sine wave that's constantly still trending upwards.
Yeah,
I don't know. but let's get into spoilers. So, spoiler alert, ladies and gentlemen at home.
The one thing that I really disliked how they handled Lea Seydoux, her character, like in the torture sequence, how she says "I love you" to Bond, like five minutes.
Oh my god!
I thought that was so. And then I could forgive that because after that she says like goodbye to him and she's like, "I don't want to live this life anymore," which I don't think I've seen really many Bond girls do. So I was like, oh, that's a cool little twist. Like, she's going to, you know, get out of his life. And then I hated the ending where they just walk away. I hated that so much. I thought it was such a cheap, you know, send off. So,
well, that's my only issue with that is that, yeah, we're going to get more James Bond films. Like,
yeah,
so they're going to have to do something about that. And it's going to remove the whole meaning behind the entire thing. Unless they murder her,
yeah.
Which,
well, I mean, they could do something similar to what they've done in the Mission Impossible series, which is marry him and then have her be in the distance, in the background, just always.
But she doesn't have that built. Her character is so poorly handled here that there's no emotional attachment. You know, when she says "I love you," you were like, "Oh yeah, you were into that, Brian."
I didn't give a shit because it's a Bond film. Like, I don't expect any strong emotions from a Bond film. Like,
right, and the fact
I'm willing to take it. You know,
the fact that they tried to do it here is embarrassing. I think,
but they didn't. I don't feel like they were leaning into it that hard. Like, they had her
say it. I think they did.
That's literally the final shot of the film.
Yeah, they walk away together. Like, they're clearly holding hands in love, and it's just like, what? When did that happen?
It's like any swashbuckling action film where a romance happens. It's like Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock in Speed.
Like, I haven't seen that movie in like 20 years.
Like,
well, okay, then
I don't come to Bond films for great emotional catharsis. And so, like, if it doesn't happen, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's pure plot.
Well,
I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
So what did you guys, I think, so for me, the whole Blofeld, I guess it's a reveal. It's more
it's
just
Blofeld.
Like he's Blofeld. Sorry. He just says it, and then it's just kind of like okay. Like it's kind of like the Star Trek Into Darkness thing.
Okay. I've heard so many people say this, and it's 100% not.
All right. Let's hear it.
Ooh. Okay.
Star Trek Into Darkness. They're like, ooh, John Harrison. Ooh, John Harrison. And then he's like, my name isn't John Harrison. My name is Khan. And then it's like dun dun dun. And that literally the people in the film are like, that means literally nothing to me. I have to go talk to old Spock to figure it out. Mm-hmm. I guess spoilers for Star Trek Into Darkness.
No. Yeah.
And in this one, he's not saying it as though you're supposed to know who that is. And in Star Trek Into Darkness, it was literally like, ooh, let's have a pause so that everyone in the audience can totally flip out because no one saw this coming. Like, everyone knew he was Blofeld. It was the man who you knew,
and everybody knew he was Khan too,
right? And this film knows that people are going to know that. It's not a surprise. It's literally him saying, "You knew me as Franz Oberhauser."
Oberhauser,
yeah.
and that person died in the mountains. My name is now Ernest Stavro Blofeld.
Yeah, whatever.
And that, you know, and then it's over. And then Bond quips, "That's a catchy name."
Like, it's see, not, I didn't understand that at all.
They're not doing it for twist factor. They're doing it to say, "This is a man who has broken, and he's now taken a whole new name." He says it's a mother's bloodline, so that causes even more of a severance from the father that he murdered. And it's nothing like the con line. It's nothing like the con line. I honestly think it's lazy to say that.
I think, go ahead, Jordan.
No, go ahead.
I think it's the exact same thing that's going on in the con stuff. It's just the way that you're laying down the machinations of it and the plot device of it. I get that, Brian, but they've been basically across all press. They've been saying, "No, he's not Blofeld. No, he's not Blofeld. No, he's not Blofeld."
Well,
and in the movie, he's Blofeld.
About that, so I guess it didn't matter to me.
But okay, all that aside, like, just I just think it's a very, the way, you know, for people who are fans of, you know, the history of Bond and things, don't you think this was a pretty kind of haphazard, kind of muddled way to introduce a character like this? Just his entire arc? Yeah, go ahead.
They have a moment where Bond wakes up and there's a white cat in the scene, and you're just like, really? A white cat? Like,
what does it matter that he has a cat? I don't understand. I'm not a fan of Star Trek or Bond to the extent that most people who say they are fans of them are fans of them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm not a Trekkie. I do like Star Trek. I'm not a Bondy, but I like James Bond.
You're not a Bond
a Bonder?
Boy? A Bond
I'm not
boy?
Into bondage. I don't I'm not under Bond. I don't know. Anyway, so like, I see the cat and I'm like, oh, okay. Did it ever make sense that he had a cat? Are we supposed to attach any special meaning? Like, how could they have inserted him in a way that wouldn't have caused this kind of reaction? I mean, in Star Trek Into Darkness, he says, you know, my name is Khan. And, like, he says it as though, isn't it crazy that I've hidden my identity from you? And in this movie, he says it as though, I'm not the person you knew. This is the new me. I don't care that there's a cat. The guy has a cat.
See,
like, what is the problem?
My big thing is, to be honest with you, I don't even know who Blofeld is. Like, I think I've watched
a
couple.
He's Christoph Waltz. That's it. It's over. The entirety of everything you need to know is everything that he's done in the movie plus his name. Like, that's it. Who is Ernesto Stavro Blofeld? He's a crazy guy who hates James Bond on a personal level, and he wants to help destroy the world. Bingo. Everything that you need to know about the character is given to you in the movie through the actions of the movie, with no need for Daniel Craig to get on a cell phone and call Sean Connery to ask about it.
I guess
that is the main distinction between the Blofeld line and the Khan line.
Well, then just taking him at face value, I don't think his character, I think the movie just grinds to a halt when he's introduced and he goes through his plan and you go into his little bunker and meet all the people who have looked to have the worst work life of all time, just sitting in front of.
But I mean, that's the core of, like, those classic Bond films that we all claim to love, like Goldfinger. Like, who the hell were all those people in their weird uniforms with their weird looking fake guns? I mean, these things never make sense. And the fact that people are trying to now again is just like Skyfall fucking the future of the Bond franchise, because no one's ever gonna just give it that again. I mean,
I think, yeah, it is a two-handed thing, though, because it is them trying to build this up into something it's not, whereas those other films you're discussing are one-off, just fun adventures, and there's a sense of fun and kind of... Christoph Waltz, there's nothing fun to his character, I didn't think. There was no...
Nope.
Yeah. It was
brutal,
just this dry...
character.
Yeah, it was just this dry rehashing of every villain he's played.
Really, you didn't think his, like, cuckoo line was...
Oh, I
when no. he looks up at James Bond and goes, cuckoo?
No?
I thought that was vaguely chilling.
I forgot about that.
I was like, what the shit is he doing?
Well, I mean, his delivery is going to be chilling. I mean, he could, you know, just read anything and it would probably be chilling.
He could politely invite you in for tea and it would be terrifying. But no, I just don't see where the venom is coming from.
I don't think there's all that much venom. I think it's just a tiredness of the same old thing happening again.
Would it have been better if his name just stayed Oberhauser and that was it?
Yeah, it doesn't need to have this connection, I don't think. I mean, they can do that. That's fine. But the way they did it, I thought, was just kind of lame. And
it was lazy.
That exciting. Lazy. Yeah.
It felt really lazy.
All right.
But like that, you can't tell me that action sequence where they're running, he's running through things, they fall onto that bouncy net like that. It was so anticlimactic. Like, I don't know.
And then he could bust out in the boat afterwards. Yeah. It's just like, what? What is this?
Well, there were boats under that place. You saw them when he went in there.
Yeah.
And you saw the net because there's a giant hole in it and people
I did not have trouble buying any of that. I just was like, this is really, it was kind of almost like Skyfall, the Home Alone type situation where it just felt very both of the endings of these films feel very anticlimactic. It's just kind of peter off.
Feels more anticlimactic than Skyfall, because I thought Skyfall, that kind of grudge match, was like a culmination of everything that had happened.
At least it was shot better, I guess.
I
don't know. I like Hoyta. He did good.
Yeah, he did a solid job. Yeah.
I don't know. I just hear people having so many issues with this. My main issue is that, you know, they're like, you know, well, you know, James Bond's an orphan. Well, he was raised by, you know, this family and for like 2 years. And I'm like, wait, what? Have I ever heard about this family before?
Yeah. See,
that's my issue, is like you purposefully muddied his background so you could literally, like, every new Bond film say, well, after he left that family, he went to this other family and another son got jealous of him. And I would just have to accept it because I don't know.
Yeah, right. Which is, well, that's what's kind of frustrating about the whole trying to tie things together. I think they just need to really just kind of put that on the back burner for another decade or two and just have some...
But this has been a long time coming. I mean, like, films have been doing this for so long, and it's really getting annoying that they're like, it's not enough that this guy wants to take over the world. Like, what's another reason that our hero would want to stop him? It's like, what if they were stepbrothers? What if they were paternal twins?
I was thinking that Bond, Seydoux, and Waltz were all going to be related.
Well, it's funny because Christoph Waltz says, like, I met your father once, and she's like, I don't remember that. And I thought he was going to be like, I was the man that you thought you killed.
Years
old or however old.
Precisely.
Yeah. And I was, so I, it actually, I thought I might have liked it more too, if they had done that.
What about the setup of Bond finding him at the climax and just picturing Waltz like furiously printing images of dead villains and taping them and just like spray painting his name and a little directions.
Well, it's funny because for all the time it would have taken to set up all those pictures, like, you think he would have written in spray paint a little neater.
Yeah. And then maybe like after you blow up the building, just like wait and see if he's like gonna come out in a boat.
Effort into it, and then like Bond is like right at the door and he's like, oh no, what if he goes upstairs? No, I need him to go downstairs. Ah, shit. And then he finds a can of spray paint and is just furiously spraying on his way down. I'm also confused about the giant, like, perfectly carved slab of bulletproof glass that he was able to put up.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, it's weird too, like, how intensely tied up Lea Seydoux is. When, like, well, Bond finds her, she looks like...
It looked like all of the wires to the bombs were connected to her, and if he were to...
It was so disturbing. I was like...
Yeah, I thought that's what was going to happen,
and then he's just like, all right, you're out, let's go.
Yeah, it was like, just
he just pulled out a knife and just, started cutting lines.
You
want to
talk about disturbing? You want to talk about the weird tentacle porn that played at the beginning of this movie?
Yeah, we should not bring up that opening.
The god-awful song. If you want to knock points off this movie... And you want to give it like a C-, all you have to do is say Sam Smith, and I'll just agree with you.
I actually, my dirty secret is that I don't mind the song, and in the context, it could have been like a closing song over the credits or something. But yeah, to start off the movie, it doesn't really work.
No. We literally see Bond blow up half of Mexico City and then have a crazy awesome fight in a flipping helicopter. And then it cuts to Sam Smith wailing with a wounded seal. I'm just like, what the shit is this?
It's just not.
The other spoiler section. Was there a second that you guys didn't think Andrew Scott was like going to turn out to be like? There's like no.
He did all but mustache twirl.
Yeah,
that performance was hilarious.
At first, I thought he was like just a shitty bureaucrat, and he was either going to do one of two things. He was either going to swing in their direction at the end, realizing that they were right, or he was going to become evil. And the second that he was like, well, South Africa will change their minds soon enough.
Yeah, that was
like, well, why don't you just say, wait until I blow those assholes up, and then we'll see what goes on.
Good thing they agreed to our iPad voting system.
They didn't have time to set up the network, so this time they actually just had to write slips of paper and put it in a hat.
Brutal.
I want to see a scene where the villain like reaches under his desk and draws the weapon, the secret weapon he's been hiding there, and grabs the one that they didn't unload, and it ends up like shooting the guy and like, oh, you had another one? Ah, crap! I got the wrong
God
one.
Damn it.
Yeah. It is. It's one of those movies where coming out of it, I was like, "Oh, okay, that was solid." And then I started writing my review, and every time I thought about anything that happened in the last half, I was like, "Oh no, oh crap."
Can we
talk
about that?
C stands for careless, and I'm like, "Oh, come on!"
I know.
I was waiting for him to say "cunt," but
I was hoping he would.
Anyways, can we talk about the train fight sequence? Because holy shit, that is some top notch filmmaking right there.
Yeah, I like that.
And I love the fact that, I mean, a lot of people have kind of said that they kind of waste Dave Bautista in the film because, like, he literally has like I think four lines of dialogue, and that's when he dies, when he's being pulled out of the train. And does he say? My friend had a very interesting question. Does he say "oh shit" or does he say "oh shoot"?
I think. Ooh, I kind of hope that he says "oh shoot."
I had tears coming down my face because I didn't want him to die. He was so great.
Yeah, I thought he was good. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of one of the rumors that I heard was that he's not dead. That he may end up being the Jaws like kind of villain for, you know, this film series going on, so he may return.
I'd be down for that.
Yeah, I would watch him.
Because, I mean, he survived the car crash. I mean, I can't imagine that getting yanked out of a train into the desert could kill him.
The only thing is that in one scene, it looked like he had this really incredible gun, and it would have been nice to have, like...
Yeah, what was it, like the double barrel pistol?
Yeah.
I remember that.
Dude, that was awesome.
He shoots it at the plane a couple of times.
Yeah.
And Bond immediately is like, I'm out of this fight.
Yeah. this is a movie that does like really lean on the fact that if you have a gun, you could probably take down an aircraft.
I do like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to bring up was, I can't even remember. Actually, ah, shit.
All right.
thing I really like when Craig first meets Lea Seydoux at like her clinic, and there's this really funny sequence where Craig is just so pissed off at the bar, like he orders a drink and they're like, "We don't serve alcohol," and he's like, "Oh,
it's like a probiotic."
Yeah, they give him
Ben gets it.
And then he's like, just put that down, throw that down the toilet.
Cut out the
And then one of the bodyguards like is about to approach him, and he's just like, stop.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
because they try
that.
To stop him, and he like hits two of them. One of them gets up, and he's like, stop.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed Craig in that mode.
See, and like I said, I mean, all of that stuff happens in the first half of the film. And that's where all the fun, the joy lies. And it's just like from after the train sequence, as soon as Mr. Hinks is gone, it just feels like it slows to a crawl in that.
I don't feel that really. Like, they go to the secret place that's in like a crater in the middle of the desert, which again, classic Bond. And you know, you've got the Fey kind of steward of this guy's evil megaplex, and he's like, you know, we're going to show you to your room, blah blah blah, like meet for drinks at 4, and then you know he's like has a silver tray that he wants Bond to put his gun on. I mean, like, stuff like that was just classic weird.
Yeah, that was kind of funny.
Bond.
Yeah,
I thought it was really weird that he has a giant meteorite in his base, and I can't help but think he claims that it's the oldest like meteorite in existence or something like that. I think.
Yeah.
And I'm like, doesn't that belong in a museum somewhere? Like,
well, I'm sorry, Indiana Jones, but
why does he have that? Like,
because
how?
He's an evil person. I mean,
I don't know. It just,
he wants it. He
just seems like
it.
A weird tree to be carrying around.
And yeah,
he should make money off of that.
The scene where they're in his complex and he does the whole like turning off all the screens, and then everyone turns and looks at Bond.
That had to take at least a few rehearsals.
That was
just,
so
again, it's one of those things that I love in these kind of movies, because it's like, if you imagine how that came to be, it's just incredible.
Right. It's like, hey guys, all right, we're going to try this out. I'm going to shut the lights. You guys all have to get up at the same time.
I know I've taken you hundreds of thousands of miles away from your family for my evil enterprise in the middle of the desert. That is 100% solar powered, though, so at least we're being green about it.
And I didn't
we're wasting
see any
a lot of money on lawns.
Or
and I would love it
desk.
If when these. Wait, what?
I didn't see any walking treadmill desk or standing desk. I feel very bad for those people having to sit down for hours at a time.
Well, no, because every once in a while he turns the lights off and they can stand up and turn around. And really, you didn't like feel anything when Bond is telling Madeleine Swann, who's played by Lea Sado, not to watch her father shoot himself in the head?
I did like that.
Yeah.
I did like that moment. And if I can get less needles into brains and faces, that would be great. I would enjoy
that.
That
scene was chilling. I loved that.
Oh, I was kind of confused, like, the second needle.
Yeah,
or
the second needle is supposed to take away his memory.
Well,
and stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
he
that
says, he says if it finds the right place, so clearly,
yeah,
it did not.
It just, like, it just kind of wasn't an interesting payoff.
Yeah.
Well, did you oh my god, how awesome would that be?
Well, no, I just assumed he would have like got out before it went in his neck.
Or it could be a way to reset this franchise.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, it would have been a perfect way to reset the franchise and just be like, well, that Bond is useless now. He doesn't even know how to walk.
Yeah, like sticking the tip of a pencil into that little button on the back of a watch. Full reset. I loved the watch. Speaking of watches, there's for whatever reason, my favorite spy gadget is anything that happens to be in a watch.
I do got to say that they did a very clever thing with the car, having it not have any of the mechanisms like loaded and ready to go. I thought that was brilliant. It was, yeah, it was a great payoff of like that classic, like, oh, look at all these gadgets. Oh crap, this wasn't ready to go out on the field. I don't have any of this active.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of fire and I can't eject. I don't know. So yeah, in general, I enjoyed this film. I would say it's like, you know, it probably goes Skyfall, Casino Royale, this film, and then Quantum of Solace. But I mean, like, the only one of those that's a real precipitous drop in quality is Quantum of Solace, in my eyes.
I haven't watched it in quite a long time.
Because you're talking about grinding to a halt. Like, do you remember the last like 30 minutes of Quantum of Solace?
I'd rather
not Quantum
that
of Solace. Casino Royale.
What?
The end of Casino Royale is he's in a hospital, and then he's on the French Riviera, and then they're in Venice, and like it's like
they're setting up his love
minutes
life.
Oh, for God's sakes!
I love that stuff.
Yeah, that worked.
The literal plot of the movie is over and it just keeps going.
No, Brian,
there's a
that,
house
that was
that,
stunning.
Like, there is a house that drowns. Like, what? That's an amazing sequence.
I just like that you said that the house drowns.
That's what it literally is.
You were
doing
saying
that
that the house itself was drowning or that the house drowns other people.
It does a little bit of both.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, does anyone else have anything to say about this film?
No. If you were going to say it, you've already seen it, so.
This is actually probably true. We really got to work on getting these things out earlier.
Well, can we talk about the price point of this budget? If that budget is actually true, because
we'll never know. So,
I mean, that just seems insanely high. And some of these films, like, I get the superhero films costing so much because they do so much visual work and so much green screen and things like that. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, unlike some of those films that you mentioned, you do get the sense that they did go to these locations.
Well, that's what I was
saying. Things like that. So,
are we coming to a point where it's going to be more expensive to do things practically? Because, I mean, we had beautiful, wonderful special effects in Life of Pi, and that effects studio immediately went out of business because they had to lowball them so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you want to talk about a lack of expense. You paint a room green, and you have a bunch of people lacquered up in plastic hero suits just jumping around, and then you paint on the background.
I think the other issue is that Sony gave them whatever they would ask for because they're really hurting right now, so they've had no other hits this year pretty much. So I think they're just like, all right, this is the one movie we have in our lineup that guaranteed to make make money, so we'll give you what you want. But yeah, I mean, the fact that it needs to make, what, $650 million just to break even is just kind of hurts my brain. But
make a Bond film for like $16 million, and it would still make as much as it would make if you spent $300 million on it.
That's the thing.
All you need to do is just have some of those James Bond quips and have him hang out with a like maybe Q, or maybe hang out with a few of the people that he has a lot of chemistry with in the film, and I'd love to see that.
Maybe just a 2-person piece between Craig and Dave Bautista set in a dining room.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with I know we keep comparing it to Mission Impossible, but Rogue Nation didn't necessarily go bigger. I mean, Ghost Protocol, it's hard to kind of top that centerpiece. And so I feel like, but they figured out a way to, you know, kind of make it more of a throwback. You know, they had to they literally changed their ending to make it more small scale, which is kind of insane in today's age. So
yeah, I really like that about that one.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think there's ways to do it. But with this, I mean, there's 4 people responsible for this screenplay, which is, I would want to just understand their process of how
I want to see the Word document with track changes on.
Exactly. So I think, I don't know, they just, like I said, I think they need to reset, get into more fun mode, and learn something from Ethan Hunt pretty much.
Yeah, the Skyfall is reported at $150 to $200 million, and then Rogue Nation is at about $150 million, and so like this film costs nearly twice that, and I don't know, something about that just drives me crazy.
Yeah, it didn't feel any more expensive than Skyfall, so that's why. Yeah, I don't know either. We can't solve it. Good luck, Sony. actually they're actually probably going to switch studios, so we'll see. Maybe another studio can kind of give more better notes. So
do y'all want to see Craig continue?
He did feel pretty tired in certain sections of this, so I don't know. I don't think I care enough about this franchise that, I'm not like, if Idris Elba doesn't get it, I'm not gonna boycott it, and I don't really care either way. It would be fun to see him take a different direction.
I mean, like, if a Bond film comes out, I'm gonna see it. I wasn't even excited about Casino Royale or Skyfall until like the day that I went and saw it. Like, I don't get hyped. I just don't get hyped up for movies anymore. Mm-hmm. For instance, everyone was freaking out about the Star Wars trailer, and I was like, oh, this must be like everyone feeling how I felt when I saw the Knight of Cups trailer.
Yeah. I'm with you there, Brian.
Because it's the thing, like, you know it's coming. Like, Star Wars didn't have to do any marketing. You know Star Wars is coming. And that's not
how
a knock.
In the trailer for The Finest Hours.
That's been on your radar forever.
I just like it. It's one of like Marvel could just say like, "Hey, we're opening up Iron Man 4 tomorrow."
Yeah,
and they could make just as much money. Yeah. Like
they could leave all of their, you know how they do like untitled release dates. They could just leave them all untitled until the day before, and it would actually probably be a much better experience.
They could just drop it like Beyonce did with like one of her albums. Just like just drop it at midnight and just be like, "Oh, hey, it's out now.
Guess what you can see tomorrow."
Yeah,
but that's and that's the thing. Like, I don't need people to tell me these movies are coming. I will get excited about them when I go to see them. The things that I need are the movies that I don't know are coming, the not sure things. So Terrence Malick's new films, something like The Revenant. I have watched that trailer numerous times.
Well, with Terrence Malick, you know what's coming for like 5 years, so that's a little different.
Well, it's the same thing we had with
maybe something like Upstream Color or Junon or something, where it's like literally a month before the new PTA movie. You like don't, you know?
Speaking of which, why did we not spend this entire episode talking about the Shane Carruth news that we got this week?
Oh, I know.
Oh, God. That is amazing, amazing cast.
Just the best.
If you don't know what we're talking about, go on the film stage and search Modern Ocean and be pleasantly surprised.
So freaking cool. I'm so excited.
All right. Let's be done with Spectre.
Okay. Are we ever truly done with anything, though? Because as this movie tells us, the dead
are
alive. I did like the drums going on in that scene.
Oh, great. Music great opening.
Was perfect. So that's it. That's our show for today. What are we talking about next week?
There's a good amount of limited releases out now. Like Spotlight is quite good.
Ooh, do want to see Spotlight.
The Assassin is quite good.
I want to see The Assassin. And then Room is also kind of expanding. Yeah.
White comes out on Friday. That's quite good.
Room is so weird because I feel like it's both been out and been coming out for like 3 months.
It's been doing both, yeah.
It's been about, yeah, it's 3 weeks now it's been out, which, and it actually is sadly not really, I mean, I didn't really love it, but it's not doing great at the box office, so maybe it'll...
What was the film that was doing really well in, like, super limited release and then expanded and then
Steve
just
Jobs.
Like, crushed?
Yeah,
oh,
Steve
that's
Jobs.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it did really bad. So.
Yes, it did. Okay, that's it then. So, still don't know what we're talking about next week.
Oh, actually, you should do Tangerine because that comes out on Blu-ray and it's on like iTunes, and that's the one shot on iPhones. The transgender drama. It's very, very interesting. And
is it a drama or a comedy?
It's a mix. It's more of a drama, though, I would say.
Oh, okay, because I got excited about it when I heard
dramedy.
It was funny. That's a dramedy. Edutainment.
Yeah. But that is worth the discussion. So,
all right, well, we'll figure it out and it'll happen. Maybe we can utilize that cool little Twitter poll function to see what the people want.
Yeah. But it only gives you two options, which is annoying.
Well, that sucks. So that's it. Let's tell the fine people at home where they can find us between now and then. So, Danny King.
Twitter.com/thekingbulletin, all over the interweb.
The Village
and,
Voice.
Village Voice.
Yeah, ooh, Danny, yeah. Get it. Woo.
And the next meeting of Spectre, I'll be there.
Really?
Yeah, we're talking about international crime.
Yeah,
so
wow.
Stop by.
Are you gonna have a cool? You know, there were so many voting scenes in this movie.
Maybe there's an interpretation there.
Maybe
there's a very democratic process to being evil.
Oh yeah, of course there has to be. I mean, no evil man can rule with an iron fist, or can he? I don't know. Anyway, Jordan Raup, why don't you tell us where we can find you?
Yes, at JP Raup on Twitter, and then on the film stage every day.
All right, Bill Graham, I have called you a different name every time I've addressed you. Where can we find you online?
You can find me in a room trying to desperately forget Quantum of Solace.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that I brought that up.
And also on the film stage doing reviews and interviews.
All right. And of course, you can find me on Twitter @BrianJRowan on the film stage, where you can read my review of the Peanuts movie because I have apparently become the film stage's resident kids movie reviewer.
Any animation.
I already called the Good Dinosaur too.
What's the movie called again?
The Peanuts movie.
Peanuts movie.
And you can find me on my personal site, dearfilm.net. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for joining us, and tune in next week.